Well, welcome everyone. Hopefully everybody's doing fantastically well today. Darren Saul here, your host of Playing With Perspective, the Suspended Animation Podcast. I have episode 91 with the famous Robert Bruss. How are you doing, Rob?
G'day, Darren. I'm good, mate. You're nudging up against triple figures there. That's exciting. That's exciting for any podcaster.
I'm going to celebrate when I get to 100. I'm getting ready.
You know what happens when you hit 100 podcasts?
No, what happens?
Nothing. You go to 101.
Very true. So, man, I'm getting excited. But for everybody out there, Rob is very, very passionate about mindset. And so we're going to be chatting about mastering your mind and going all in. Now, after 10 years in the Australian Defence Force, in both Royal Australian Navy and Australian Army, Rob found his entrepreneurial career off to a racing start. His initial business was as an electrical contracting company, which, as Rob puts it, went from zero to hero in just a couple of months. His journey into the digital world started around the same time. After not being able to afford a website for his business, he worked out how to hack one together that sufficed, and over time realized that this was a skill that he could develop. Fast forward to 2012 to 2017, and it's been a digital ride and career the whole way. More recently, Rob has set up and founded his own podcast called Going All In. It's all about telling the stories of others and doing whatever it takes to break through and succeed in every aspect of life. Rob will tell you that he absolutely loves what he does because it aligns perfectly to his desire to sit, chat, drink four cups of coffee over a really deep conversation. So, Rob, welcome, my friend.
Thanks, mate. It's always fun to hear that introduction read by somebody else because it still holds true. I wrote that a little while ago, and yeah, I still love to sit and have conversations and podcast and just talk about stuff that matters, you know, for hours at a time because the format just lends itself perfectly for that. I love what I do.
It does, man. And as a fellow podcaster, I share your passion. You know, we have so much fun when we podcast. And we learn so much as we go as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
And it's an honor to have you on the show. You know, I've been following you. I'm a huge fan and really looking forward to getting into this content with you.
Awesome.
So, mate, tell us a bit about your story, just anything that I might not have covered, just to paint the backdrop a little bit.
Yeah, sure. I guess part of the story is the transition out of my digital marketing days and agency, if you like, into what I'm doing today. And I think that transition is well worth talking about because we all experience transitions in our life. We all know what it's like to end a relationship or start a relationship or to quit a job or to go for a new job. But and at the time when you go through things, it's really tough. Yep. And at the time when things are coming to an end, maybe through no fault of your own, or maybe that it is because it's by choice, things can be really, really difficult. And it's at those times where you have to really look inside of yourself to find out what you're really made of. Yep. And I love the name of your podcast, Playing With Perspective, because life is all about perspective. Life is all about, you know, I can look at one thing in one particular circumstance and think that it's the best thing in the world. And you might think I'm crazy. Yeah. And it's all a matter of perspective, right? And
it is.
I guess the one thing that, you know, that wasn't kind of alluded to in the introduction there was the transition out of my digital marketing agency into the podcasting space. And what had happened was my business was pretty successful. I would go to work in the morning and I would be in front of clients and I would be selling all day, every day. And I'd win the business, come back to the office and say to my bro, hey man, we've got another client, another $3,000, another $5,000, another $20,000, another $2,000. And you know, it was the quintessential sales job where it's the thrill of the chase. Yeah. You get in there and you're winning the business and you get it. And then you go, I don't know if you've ever wanted something in your life, like you wanted that hot car or that fast motorbike or that toy, and you get it and you're like,
100%. I agree with you, mate. The journey is more exciting than the destination, for sure.
It is, right? And the thrill of the hustle and the chase in digital marketing and winning clients was what kind of got me up and got me out of bed each day, because it's really unknown and there was always a feeling of trepidation that kind of drove me and kept me going, because it's your own business, right? If you don't sell, you don't eat.
That's right.
And I got pretty good at it, but every now and then I would get involved in some project management, and because I can talk the language of IT really good and I understand what the clients want. Yep. So I would have a conversation with a client, understand what they would want and think, you know what, instead of passing it over to the project manager, I could probably write this up and I could probably handle this job myself. Yep. And the very last job that I did was for a an energy comparison website. And it was a huge job. And I bought into the client's BS of that person not having any money, despite the fact he's driving around in a $150,000 Merc, wearing a $3,000 suit every time I see him, and taking me for a $400 lunch every time we go out and talk about his website. So I bought into his BS of him not having any money. Yeah. And as a result of that, the job was underquoted considerably. Yeah. And because it's underquoted, he wants all of these features, all of these things. It's like, can't be done. And my project management skills are not as good as what I think they are. It's a little bit like my fitness, right? As a 40-year-old guy, I think I can do what I did when I was in my 20s, but you know, my body tells me otherwise. Yeah. And it's like your ambition kind of outweighs your ability sometimes. And while I'm really good at sales, I'm pretty average at project management. Yeah. And I thought I was really good at it. Anyway, the job went sideways on me and it was terrible. I kept having to go back to the guy, telling him about problems, slippages in the deadline. We needed more money. Things weren't working. We had the wrong developers. And it just compounded one thing after another after another. And it was one of those things where, you know, my brother kind of made fun of me. And it's like, you're going to be one of those perfectly healthy 40-year-old guys that drops dead from a heart attack because you're so stressed.
Yeah.
And it's true. I have absolutely no health issues, but I was so unbelievably stressed by this job that I came to work one day and I said, I'm out.
Wow. Goes,
where are you going? I said, I'm out. And he goes, all right, we'll see you on Monday. Yeah. I'm like, no, man, I'm out. Ouch. Completely. Like, I quit. And he's like, just go and have a holiday. Don't throw your toys and have a tantrum. Don't be a baby about it. And I'm like, no, man, I can't do this for the rest of my life. But the reality is I could do that for the rest of my life because it's pretty easy. I'm good at it. Makes a lot of money. And my brother and I work well together. You know, he's my best mate. So, but it was just, my heart just wasn't in it anymore. And it was one of those intersections in my life where I was forced to commit. I was forced to make a choice of, you know, you can do that forever and be unhappy forever like you are, or you can take the road less traveled and work it out. Yeah. Work out what lights your fires, work out what you really want to do with your life. And as you're going through those moments, I'm sure that the people watching and listening to this have experienced it before. It's very hard to have foresight, and it's very hard to join the dots of what connects things in foresight. You can only join the dots when you're looking back in hindsight, right? That's that Steve Jobs quote. Yep. But I was there on the cusp of all of that, knowing all of these things and knowing all of these quotes and knowing all of everybody's journey and everything like that. And I'm just like, I'm so sick of my life. What am I going to do? And I really sort of, I wrote down all the things that I love. I love aviation. What can I do in aviation? Nothing. I'm too old to go and be a pilot. No one will have me in a job. I won't make any money anyway. They're all poor, those guys. And, you know, except for airline captains, but I kind of missed the boat on that. So that was sort of scratched off the list. Then the second thing I had on my list was motorbikes. And I thought, what if I could, I love motorbikes, right? I love motorbikes ever since I've got my bike license when I was in my 20s. And I thought, what if I could go and sell bikes? That'd be a cool thing. That'd be an awesome thing. But you know what? I couldn't get a job, and no one would have me because I had no automotive experience, and I definitely had no motorcycle experience. I was just a guy who loved bikes and loved riding them, and I was good at sales, but it didn't sort of translate. And I don't think my methodology and my energy translated well in that space. So I applied for a couple of jobs and was rejected, and I was sorely disappointed, thinking, well, I guess that's only ever going to be a hobby now, and What will I do? And the third thing on my list was media. I wanted to do more media, and how can I do more media? And it's like, well, I'm not a journalist. I'm not going to uni to get my journalist degree because those people are a dime a dozen and they're all out of work. No one's got a job. It's too competitive here in Australia. What if I can go and first of all, start off my own podcast and hone that skill, and I'll just become a YouTuber and I can do all the media I could ever possibly want. And then, you know, good idea, champion. Well done. You're following your passion. You're following your heart. But how the hell are you going to make money?
Yeah.
Work it out along the way.
See what happens.
Never been a problem in your life previously. Just work it out now. And that's pretty much what I did. But, you know, I recount that journey to you in sort of 5 or 6 minutes like that. But that was probably 6 months of my life. And it was the hardest 6 months of my life because it was a journey of self-discovery. And it was a journey of really looking inside of myself to find out what made me tick. And I'm surprised that I got all the way into my 40s before I realized what actually made me tick and what fired me up. And it just goes to show how automated and methodical your life can become if you're not careful. And I guess that's the lesson in it, right? Don't, if you're on a mouse wheel, just every now and then step off that mouse wheel and just make sure that that's the one you want to be on, because there's other mouse wheels you can get on, which are pretty cool too.
That's right. I like that. You
know, it's an interesting time in my life. So.
Wow. And so how long did you take to really make that decision? I mean, obviously it was thinking, you were thinking about it, it was bubbling. How long did it take for you to say, okay, that's it?
With that job, it was one of those things.
Straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, that was it. The job that kept going sideways, and I was buying into this guy's BS about him not having any money. Yeah. And I wasn't cranky with him.
Yeah.
Because all he was doing was what a normal person would do, would be to negotiate a price to get the best possible price for the thing that he wanted. And I was just going, yeah, all right, whatever. And I just couldn't be bothered negotiating with him. And I just gave him what he wanted because it was easier than arguing with him, because he was a hard negotiator. And I just couldn't be bothered. Yeah. But the fact that he was driving around in that hot car and wearing those fancy clothes, and we were eating that fancy food while I was like over here stressed like you wouldn't believe. And again, that wasn't his fault. That was all my fault. But that was like, enough's enough. I just can't do it anymore. And like, I've done some hard things in my life, some really hard things in the military, some really hard things in business. And you wouldn't think that building somebody's website would be the thing that broke me, but it was.
Fascinating, isn't it? Like,
it was, yeah.
You never can tell what's going to be the most stressful for you in life. It's funny.
Yeah.
You're never really prepared, but I kind of want to get into that because, you know, we're talking about digging deep, you know, really understanding yourself. And I'm very passionate about this stuff. You know, I've always been passionate about this stuff. And I think once you kind of make your journey, or you take a slightly different stage in your journey or a route in your journey, you can do it again and again and again. Mm. But the first one, as you say, is the hardest.
Oh, yeah.
And once you go through that cycle of self-discovery and you really go deep, you discover parts of yourself that you never really knew.
Yeah, it's so unbelievably true. And it's a muscle, right? Your mindset is a muscle. And what I used to lose sleep over now, I'm like, oh, whatever, man, I'll do it next week. It doesn't even bother me anymore, right? Because I've seen it all before and I've experienced it all, and it's not really a problem for me. But when you're a little bit lost in your life and you're not sure what you want to do, and you know, in this COVID time, in this pandemic time that we're all going through now, I think a lot of people would be able to relate to that, where, you know, your job's on the line or your employment has ceased and you don't know what's actually going to happen, and you're sort of faced with some decisions. I know a lot of people in aviation and a lot of pilots, particularly because I worked a bit in that space for a while, and those folks are out of work. You know, men and women in their late 40s, early 50s, some in their mid 50s who are, you know, have been flying their entire adult lives, their entire careers, suddenly don't have a job, and there's no foreseeable job within the next 6 to 18 months. Yeah. So what are they going to do? Your savings are only going to get you so far. JobKeeper's not really a thing.
That's right.
What do you do? How do you shift? And I was talking to a mate of mine the other day, and he said that he's gone back to university to study a law degree.
Wow.
And I'm like, man, you're not doing things by halves, are you? You know, surely there's something else that you could do. But that's you know, that was his ticket, right? If I go and get a bit more education, then I think that I'll be more employable later down the track. Yeah. But, you know, I think when you're faced with really tough decisions, like we all are, it's part of the human experience, you develop that emotional muscle and you develop tools yourself to actually make it work. And I've spent the last couple of years really talking to people about that and having conversations on my podcast and in YouTube about those particular things. And it's been a fascinating ride. And when I kicked off, I wrote down a list of 100 people that I wanted to interview.
Wow.
And they weren't just individuals. They were, many of them were individuals, like people that I wanted to speak to. And, but some of them were about a theme. I wanted to talk to somebody about PTSD. I wanted to tell more war stories. I wanted to tell more health related stories. I wanted to talk to cancer survivors or an amputee or something like that. And I managed to tick all of those boxes. And, it's really amazing the diverse range of ways that people handle stuff. But the common denominator amongst all of that is that people know that struggle is part of the human experience.
Yep.
And how you handle that determines really the outcome of your life. But there's some common themes there as well. You know, a lot of people that struggle hard and have broken through have got a mindset that doesn't let them down. What it doesn't do is they use adversity as fuel to move forward and to continue moving forward. And that's fascinating to me. It's fascinating to see how people do that and to learn from those experiences as well.
Yeah, me too. I love that too. I love that analogy of using fear and adversity and challenge and tough situation as a fuel to drive you through. I think there's a great quote by Winston Churchill. He said, let me just try and remember it. When things are tough or something, keep going. I can't think of that quote, but when you're in, anyway, it doesn't matter. But
the interesting part about those quotes and you know, it's easy for us to sit here and say, use your fears as your fuel and go all in and go for it and do all those things. And it's easy to say that, but when you're faced with a situation like, hey man, I've been late off work, you know, I've been doing the same thing for the last 30 years and I'm not really employable anywhere else. What the hell am I going to do with my life? I've got another 15 years of work ahead of me. I've got kids, families, responsibilities, bills, investments, all of these things. And it's scary. And you can't really use fear as your fuel to do that. What you need is you need a bit of structure around that. And you need a way to channel that emotion and to take that feeling that you have and those feelings that you have consistently and push them to a place where it actually serves you and it doesn't cripple you, because it's pretty easy to go over in the corner and ignore it all and go and cry on your pillow. And I've wanted to do that many times, and I've done that many times in my life as well, but it doesn't serve you and it doesn't get you anywhere.
Well, let's chat about that. I mean, let's chat about that structure and what that means to you. How did you discover it? How do you teach that? I'd love to know more about that.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. And I appreciate the opportunity to share my philosophy and my view of that world. So as your viewers and listeners know, the podcast that I've got is called Go All In. And it's about doing whatever it takes to succeed. And over 150-odd interviews, I have a lot of feedback from the show. Not that much in social media, but a lot of emails for some reason. And people email me all the time saying, hey, I'm on the cusp of doing this or making this decision. What should I do? And I'm like, dude, you're emailing the Go All In guy. What do you reckon you should do? Yeah. Go all in, man. Like, what do you think I'm going to say? But what they're really asking me is, like, I'm not sure, like, how do I take all of this information and make a good decision about these things? And, you know, you've got to be very methodical. If you make a declaration to the world that you're going to go all in on something and you're going to commit to something and you do that, it feels really good. But if you're not set up properly and you're not willing to back yourself, the minute it gets a little bit hard, you'll let yourself off the hook.
Yep. And too hard, I'm giving up.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's pretty normal. So what is it that makes somebody stick with it? And what's the difference between somebody that's successful in a field that you think you want to be successful in and you? What's the difference? The only difference is they put their pants on the same way as you and me every day. The only difference is their mindset, right? 100%. And the way that they think about things. But it's not just their mindset. And so what's happened to me in the last couple of years of all those podcasts and hundreds of emails of people asking me, I put together a masterclass. Great. And the masterclass is a little bit, I guess, different to what you would think in a masterclass. And what it is it's the seven pillars to master your mind and go all in. So what I've done is I've taken everything that I've known as somebody who's served nearly 10 years in the military, 20 odd years as an entrepreneur, and then a couple of years of this go all in thing. And I've put that into, I've distilled it all down, and it's been a labor of love. It's been something that, you know, some people go and write a book and some people shoot videos, some people record podcasts. And this is kind of a hybrid of all of these things, right? Because you've got to write the content for the podcast and you've got to deliver it on camera and then you record the audio and do all those things. So it was a lot of fun to do. And I did it during the first lockdown that we had. So I was like, what the hell else am I going to do? I might as well do this masterclass. I've been threatening to do it for ages. And so I bought myself a green screen and I got all the gear and put it all together and it came up really nice. And the seven pillars, it all starts off with your elite mindset, because there's a difference between an average, the way the average person thinks and the way that someone with an elite mindset thinks. Then it talks about motivation and commitment, because motivation is only going to get you so far. That's what gets you started, but it's your commitment to the cause of your why, and your why must be bigger. You know, it's the pure Simon Sinek thing where your why is that golden thread that's weaved through every single little thing that you do. And the third pillar is process over outcome. The vast majority of people set a goal and they spend 95% of their time looking at that goal, wishing that they were there, but they should flip that on its head and say, all right, that's the goal. Spend just 2 to 5% of the time looking at the goal and reminding yourself, but spend 95% of the time on figuring out the process to actually get there. So I defined a really methodical way of doing that. And we use a system that was created by fighter pilots in US. It's called flawless execution. Yeah, so there's a couple of steps to that. So process over outcome is using the flawless execution model where you plan, brief, execute, you X-gap or lockstat, and you debrief every single thing that you actually do. And what that does is it gives you a way of thinking about every single thing that you do. So where am I in relation to where I want to be? How am I closing the gap from point A to point B? Well, I'm in the planning process of what I'm doing. Okay, I'll finish planning. Now I'm going to move on to the briefing process. And that's taken from fighter pilots, because fighter pilots don't just walk out to the flight line and say to their mate, hey, dude, where are we going? What bomb are we dropping today on what building? Yeah. They don't do that. There's an extensive planning process, an extensive briefing process, and then they go and execute it. And they execute the plan exactly as the way that it was briefed. And then they debrief it to take all the lessons that they've learned. So the next time they go and do it again, they do that again. So process over outcome is really critical. And hand in hand with that, in pillar number four, is time management. So you can't have a process focusing on an outcome unless you manage your time. Because if you're not spending any time looking after your time management, then time will manage you. Yeah. And I often have people say to me, they say, hey, Rob, you know, I'm trying to achieve this goal, or I want to go all in on this thing. And what I learned to say was not, hey, go all in and get on with it and commit to it and go for it. What I don't say that anymore. What I say now is, well, what did you do today to move closer towards that goal? And people often go, oh, well, I did this or I did that. And all right, the next question out of my mouth is always, well, show me your calendar. What does your calendar look like? Have you broken down your day into 30-minute or 60-minute blocks? And is every block during those waking hours committed to something? Because if you're not managing your time at a micro level like that, then time is going to manage you. And it's a really, really hard thing to do. It's a hard habit to get into. But if you look at the most successful people in the world, they're the folks that manage their time in 15-minute blocks.
Wow. I mean, and these days, even more and more than ever before, you have to, because the world's getting more crazy, more noisy. It's a digital world. There's so much information. We're bombarded with messages. If we don't manage our time, we are lost.
Yeah, distraction is a huge thing. You know, the average number of times somebody touches their mobile phone in an hour at work is 168 times. So that's you looking at your phone, touching your phone. You know, you might type a text, you might scroll, you might look at a Facebook message or something like that. Yeah. And it's said in distraction and time management that it takes you about 10 to 15 minutes to get focused on a task. And then you're focused on the task and then the phone rings. Or the message comes and you get distracted and you go and deal with that thing, and it takes you another 10 minutes to get back into it. So if you broke up your hour into 3 20-minute blocks, how effective are you? You're probably only effective for really about 15 minutes of that entire hour. So what you should do is, if you're going to start work, just sit down, put your phone into flight mode, turn all other tabs off in your browser and only look at the tabs that you need to look at. So you're not getting any alerts. That way you're not getting distracted by anything. And then what that comes to is pillar number five, which is focus and awareness. Because if you can hyper-focus onto something like that without the level of distractions that you've got, what happens is you end up managing your time, and time doesn't manage you because you're not being distracted. And then you're concentrating on your process over the outcome. So these things build on themselves like that. And right towards the end of the masterclass, I've got two pillars that I really love, which is, the first one is routines and habits of success. And we could probably talk about that one. And the last one is self-control and discipline. And people always say to me all the time, hey, Rob, it's, you know, it's easy for you, mate. You were in the military. You're a disciplined guy. You get up and you do this. But it's just not true. Because in the military, I was with guys that were the most undisciplined, lazy slobs you've ever met in your entire life. And the type of discipline that exists in the military is a carrot and stick discipline, where You need to be over here on parade in that uniform with that hat on at this time. Otherwise, you're going to be on extras. Right. And there's a very threatening sort of environment. It can be very militarized sometimes and very regimental, which is quite unpleasant as you get a bit older because you kind of grow out of being told what to do. And that doesn't really apply in the real world. That type of discipline doesn't work. That type of leadership doesn't work. And most people watching and listening would know that leaders that go out, they're threatening their staff. If you don't do this or else, you know, you might've worked for a boss like that before and gone, oh my God, I can't wait to leave this job.
It's leadership by fear instead of leadership by inspiration.
And so you can't have discipline by fear and you can't have discipline like that either. So how do you maintain self-control so you stay on track and tracking towards your targets and you're closing the gap from where you are to where you want to be? Well, what I say is that every day you got to bring the juice.
Yep.
You got to bring the juice, baby. And I ask myself, are you bringing the juice? Because when you're juiceful, you're useful. And if you're juiceless, you're useless. So bring the juice to every single thing that you do. And they're funny little words, right? It's a funny little alliteration game that you can play with yourself. And there might be something that you're listening to here that will kind of trigger something for you. And I think it's really important that you know thyself in those things. You know, juiceful and useful is a funny one for me. And sometimes I look at people, you know, sometimes I'm in the traffic and I look at some idiot that cuts me off and I go, juiceless, baby, just juiceless. And it's funny, right? It kind of triggers a little giggle in myself, even when I'm by myself and, you know, I don't beep the horn or carry on like that or anything like that. And I think there's some really good routines and habits of success that you have yourself that you probably haven't looked at or documented. But if you stick with those habits and those routines and you channel that into a process and you focus on process over outcome, got good time management, got good focus and awareness. Yep. All of these things come together to help you to master your mind and help you to when you've made that declaration to go all in, to actually stick with it. Because the minute it gets hard, you don't want to let yourself off the hook and go back to your old life. You got to be that new version of yourself to keep moving forward and keep achieving the things you want to achieve.
And so in other words, all those lessons together, that whole routine together, keeps you juiceful. Is that
absolutely
a good way to put it?
Yeah. Because when you're juiceful, you're useful. It's as simple as that, right? You know. Yeah,
because I mean, it seems quite simple. Oh, I've lost my drive. I've lost my motivation. How do I get it back? But it's not that simple. You need a whole process behind you and a whole routine behind you to allow you to make sure that you bring the goods every single day. And that's what your program is talking about.
And it's got to be simple. It's got to be simple and you got to be able to execute on it immediately. There can't be a delay. And you know, whenever you're learning something like this, you're learning new skills like these, you're like, oh my God, this is like, does this apply to me? Does this fit into my life? The short answer is yes. Because if you use the flawless execution model on everything, if that was the only thing that you did, use the flawless execution model, plan, brief, execute, lock stat, which means location and status. Where are you in relation to where you said you were going to be? And then debrief everything that you do when you're finished. If you use that cycle of flawless execution in every single thing that you do, you'll achieve 100% more than what you're currently doing now. Because I can pretty much guarantee that now when you sit down to manage your emails or to edit some photography or edit some videos or to do something, you're not planning, you're not briefing, you're just going straight to the execution phase. And you're not closing, you're not working out where you are in relation to where you want to be because you didn't plan it properly.
Yep,
and that's what happens when you end up on a mouse wheel of automation like that. And the experience that we've all had of going to work and, man, where did the day go? My God, it's like 5:30.
Yeah,
then you finish work for the day and you're like, I feel like I did nothing all day.
Was it? Yeah, I didn't feel it was productive. And that's a really good point because like I think a lot of people tend to fall down in the debriefing phase as well, in the reflecting phase.
Yeah,
we all do our stuff. We get excited. We do what we got to do, but then we don't take a minute or so to say, "Now, did that work? And if it didn't work, how can we do it better next time?" Mm. I think that a lot of the learning is in that phase, and a lot of times we forget to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think one of the key points I wanted to raise here with your audience is a great book out there by a fellow named Stanley McChrystal. And he was the general in charge of special operations in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. He was the one that did the surge in Afghanistan. They made a Netflix movie about him called War Machine, which is pretty funny. It's Brad Pitt's in it, and pretty funny. And so that's based on Stanley McChrystal. It's a bit of fiction, a bit of humor in there as well. But anyway, he wrote a book called Team of Teams. And in Team of Teams, he talks about how the American military got their butts kicked by Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and they couldn't work out why. And ultimately, without going into the long-winded version of it, what happened is the American military was designed to go up against the Russian military in NATO on the plains of Europe in a big tank battle in a nuclear war. Yeah. And here they were in some country that they never intended to be in Iraq, that is. And they were fighting an enemy with weapons from the 1970s and were losing.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the hell? How can the American military war machine be losing? And he's really good in that book at talking about how they managed the American military. And what it was not a firepower problem or a weapon system problem or even a people problem. What it was the way that they managed their teams. And when you look at the way that teams are managed these days, and it's really more, in my view, it's more applicable than at any time in history because of COVID, because of lockdowns, because of the way business is changing and the way things are evolving, that once upon a time, the things that made businesses successful were productivity. Yeah. And so if I can be more productive and I can reduce my costs, lower my cost base, get people to do more with the same or more with less, I can make more revenue, I can make more margin. But actually, that was the old school version of management that the US military were using, which was causing them to lose.
Wow.
And the reason that this is important is because it applies across every spectrum of our society, not just in the military. And it's not really a military story, it's a management story, which is kind of cool because it's easier general, right? So it's from that level. So the thing that made a difference, and the reason they were getting their butts kicked, was because the enemy were more adaptable.
Yep.
So that word adaptability, I think, is key. That's going to be a key driver as we move forward out of COVID. And if you are watching this or listening to this, I would ask you to reflect on that word for yourself. How adaptable are you? Yep. And is what you're doing right now going to serve you in 2021, in a year's time, in 6 months' time, at the end of the year, as we go into our summer break and holidays? Is your level of adaptability at a point that's going to help you to keep pushing forward and keep moving? And what do I mean by that? Well, if you can't pivot and move and change and do things new really, really quickly, you're just going to be left behind.
Yeah, like you've got to be agile. You've got to be flexible. You've got to be able to pick up and leave and change strategy mid-tech. You know, that's the only way to survive these days.
And you've got to be able to do that in a way that is meaningful, that whilst being adaptable is very disruptive, and your ability to change tack and move and pivot and to do that on a 20-cent piece is something that can be really empowering. It can be really useful, but it can also be very damaging at the same time. It's a double-edged sword, right? Because if you look at a market and you're making an assessment that, hey, we need to be more adaptable, we need to pivot over there, we need to do that, I need to introduce these new products and services, you get on a roll and it gets all very exciting and it's all, and then you forget what you're doing over here that's actually still working. Yeah. So you be careful with that adaptability, and you got to be careful in the way that you execute and you implement on it as well. But I really think that, you know, people are always talking about, oh, what's the new normal? What's the new normal? I think the new normal right now is adaptability, because that's been shown time and again with many small businesses right now, particularly in Victoria. They've had to adapt. Some of them have just had to go into complete hibernation. And I know many businesses that have had to do that, which is really sad and unfortunate. Many won't come out of hibernation, but what that does is presents enormous opportunities for the people that are not.
Yeah, and another really good point to your point exactly is to change your mind is a strength. If you've analyzed the situation and you've realized that now is the time to pivot or to do something slightly in a different way, that's a strength. Don't just stick to what you've always done because you feel like you're going to be judged incorrectly if you change your mind. You know, it's a good thing, as long as you've done the analysis and it's a viable process.
Politicians are really good at describing the way that they change their mind. And, you know, a journalist will grill them and say, hey, last week you said that. And the politician, the standard media response in their media training through their talking points is to say, well, look, you know, that is true. I definitely did say that. But in light of the new information, I've made a new decision.
That was last week. It's now this week.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's actually a pretty good motto to live by, because you can change your mind. And in light of the new information, it's not going to hurt anybody. It's all good.
Absolutely. Like I used to be the opposite. I used to always have my mind set on something and think, oh, I can't change my mind now because I've said to everybody I'm doing this. Or I can't even, you know, tell that to myself. But now I'm the opposite and I'm saying, no problem. Bang, 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 bang. And I find that it's quite liberating.
It is, absolutely. I would agree with that for sure.
So Rob, I mean, I've always been fascinated by the armed forces, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously you mentioned that, you know, there's a bit of a carrot and stick approach to motivation. But what were some of the things that you learned that instilled, you know, the strengths that you have now from your time in the military? I'd love to know a bit more about that.
Well, when I was in the Navy, my job was as a combat systems operator. And if you've ever seen the movie The Hunt for Red October with Sean Connery.
Of course.
Yeah, so that's a Tom Clancy book. They have guided missile frigates, FFGs, in that movie, hunting around submarines. That's what I used to do. So one of the skills that I learned there was to play really old school 1970s video games, because that's what the gear was. And it's fun, you know, moving warships and planes and helicopters around on a chessboard and trying to work out what's going on there. And looking back on it, you know, from today's technology and today's perspective, it's kind of laughable what we used to do. And it's amazing that like no wars ever happened, because I wonder how long we would have lasted in a real shooting war, you know, against a proper Navy. I guess they had the same sort of gear as well. So this probably wouldn't have been that bad. But, you know, in the army, in the infantry, you don't really have any skills that translate into civilian life. Right. You know, running around with a gun, stacking up on a door and clearing buildings, or, you know, engaging enemy troops in the open on the battlefield at 400 meters away is not really a skill set that lends itself to anything in civilian life.
You can't really take that to the supermarket, can you?
Well, you can. You can take the mentality there. You just can't take the weapons, because you're going to end up in jail, right? And luckily, we don't have that in our society. You know, people ask that all the time, and it's a really good question. And I've pondered that a lot. And over time, I've developed an answer for that question. And the thing that the military taught me was how to learn. Because in the military, you just do so many courses. Yeah, and you never really master a skill. Because every job that you're in, you're kind of in that job because of your experience and your rank. Yeah. And as you move up in a rank or you get more experience, you move away from that job. And you move away from that job thinking, I never quite got there. It was about 96% there. Well, that's at least how I felt, you know. I never quite got there with shooting. I was pretty good at it. Yeah. I was pretty good with a machine gun. I was pretty good with a rifle, but I was terrible with a pistol. But I never did much with that, and I never quite got there. And I always feel, you know, I was pretty good at parachuting, a couple hundred jumps, but I'm sort of safe, but I'm never quite there. And just reflecting on that, you know, the skill set that I learned was the ability to learn, because you get chucked into these courses, the most random things that you could ever possibly think of. And they're so out of context to everyday normal life, you know, when they only apply to the military or a warship. And, you know, how do you get people into a data link? And what does this all look like? You know, there's 25 warships in a data link, and I'm in charge of this, and I'm in charge. It's like the most abstract, obscure thing that you've ever thought of. And it has context for the job that you're doing. But then the minute you step away from that console, or you step away from the ops room, or you step away from the range, you're like, what does that even mean in my life?
Yeah.
Actually, nothing. It doesn't mean anything, because the skill's not, it doesn't transfer to anything else that except that skill there at that time. And you become a real specialist at those things. And there's many jobs and roles and responsibilities in this world where you're a specialist at that. But I don't think there's as many that the military give you, where you're constantly on courses and you're constantly learning new skills and you're constantly doing that. And that goes to adaptability. Yep. And I think a lot of people that leave the military become very successful entrepreneurs.
Yes.
And that's partly because of their ability to learn really quickly and to retain it and to apply it and then to adapt and pivot as they need to. Yep. Because that's the fundamental skill set that you learn, particularly as an infantry soldier. That's a real fundamental skill that you learn.
And because you've, you know, had the experience of having to do so many courses and learning so much so quickly, you have the confidence built up over time that whatever life throws at you, you'll find a way to get over it. You know, you'll manage, you can learn something new if you have to. So I think when you have that confidence, that also feeds into your mindset.
It definitely does.
So many times before.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't mean that I don't have a sense of trepidation though. Because sure. I still have those same fears as everybody else. Although I appear fearless, like, man, he's just going for it. He's just doing it. I'm just as like apprehensive and have just as much trepidation as everybody else. But I also know that you're never going to score a goal unless you get on the soccer pitch and kick the ball. You got to go out there and you got to give yourself an opportunity to do that. And I think a lot of people forget that as they get a little bit older and a bit more settled into their life, and you get really comfortable being comfortable. Yeah. And I think the other skill set that you learn pretty well, and it doesn't matter what branch or corps of the military you come from, is you learn to be uncomfortable. And whether that's physically because you're cold, wet, tired, hungry, whatever, or at work because you never quite get it and there's always someone like breathing down your neck about it. Ah, I can't quite get there. You're used to being uncomfortable. And in the civilian world, it's like, there's nothing very uncomfortable at all. I live in a bubble. I created a bubble for myself and I never put myself in those positions where I need to be uncomfortable, but I definitely test myself. You know, when I'm out on the water spearfishing or something like that, every now and then I take a couple of risks, because without a little bit of risk, there's no reward. And sometimes the payoff doesn't happen, but the risk really kind of never comes to pass. It's not a big deal, but taking the risk and in your mindset, like, hey man, you know, like I'm probably like about 600 meters off the shore here in the current. I'm a little bit far from where I should be. I'm by myself, but man, look at these ledges and these fish when I'm out here spearfishing all by myself. Wow. And you know, taking risks like that, listen, you shouldn't be out there by yourself, and you definitely shouldn't be that far offshore by yourself, especially swimming in the current. And given that it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you probably should get your butt back to the shore pretty soon. But I take the risk. It's all right. You know, I'm comfortable being uncomfortable, and I'm comfortable doing those things, and they're within the capabilities that I know I can get there. But they're just on the very edge of, hey, you're going to get yourself in trouble here too.
Yeah, so you're still quite balanced. You've still got that other side of you that's keeping you, your radar in check.
Don't get me wrong, I've been bit in the bum many times as well. And it's gone sideways on me a few times, a few motorbike crashes, parachute malfunction, a bunch of things that have gone wrong several times. So, you know, it's not without, you don't take risks all the time and not think that's going to come home to roost. That does come home to roost, but that's living, right? You got to live your life like that, and you got to go for it. And life's happening to you right now. It's not happening to you in 20 minutes. I'm never as young as I'll be right now. This is as young as I'm ever going to be, and this is happening to me right now. You know, and I try and live by that philosophy, because I've had a few near death experiences. Well, in fact, this is life number 9 that I'm on now, so better bloody well make the most of the last one.
My God. And mate, and how's the podcasting going? I mean, how many episodes you've done and what have you got lined up for the next few months?
Yeah, that's a great question. Appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit about that. Podcasting is as fun as ever. It's really good. I'm clocking 130 something. I think there's about another 20 in production. I freelance for a couple of other podcasts as well, which is a lot of fun. I like that because I get to talk about different topics and more diverse ranges and stuff like that as well. I think I'm going to change the format of the show once I hit up against 150 episodes. Yeah, I'm going to increase the production value of it. I'm going to do it a little bit differently. I'm going to ask the questions differently, and I'm going to execute on the information a bit better as well. And I think what that will do is it sort of lends itself to being able to be sliced and diced a little bit differently for social media. So the content that I produce in social media is not necessarily the long form content of an hour's podcast, but it could be sort of 6 minutes of a question and answer. And then boom, that goes out there. And you know, you record an hour or 90 minutes of a podcast and you get lots of content when you do that in that process as well. So yeah, looking forward to doing that and just exploring a little bit more creativity. And in the process of doing that, what I've been doing is listening to a whole bunch of new podcasts that I haven't heard before, and then revisiting a bunch of old ones as well. And it's good to go and listen to those things and get a bit more diversity. I've been trying to listen to a bit more feminine stuff. I've been listening to a lot of girls talk about relationships, which is a lot of fun. There's always something to be learned in those shows and the way that they deliver their content, the way they ask their questions. Because I'm really aware that My show is very sort of masculine. It's a masculine topic and I'm a masculine sort of guy.
Yep.
And although I have a lot of female fans of the show and I get a lot of messages from females as well, I want to work out how I can kind of communicate in that space a little bit more. And I think part of that process is just listening to some other women who do it really well. And there's a lot to be learned. The great thing about podcasting is you're always learning, because every now and then I hear something and I'm like, wow, that's a good format. I'm gonna emulate that, or wow, what a great question. What a great podcasting question. And it's a constant process of growth, which I absolutely love.
Yeah, and that's something that I want to kind of adapt and take on myself, is that, you know, I'm getting up to 90 or so episodes and I want to start challenging myself to run the show in a different way, introduce the show in a different way, have a slightly different format. So I think, you know, even though you're running a podcast, that's a great example of always analyzing what you're doing, thinking about how you can adapt, how you can change things, keep it fresh. And it's in line with what you're saying. It's all about mindset and adaptability, and having that process behind you to really allow you to keep growing.
It also goes to the very heart of setting goals for your podcasting as well. Particularly, you asked about what sort of guests have I got coming up. Yeah. What I've done is I've got a large network of podcasters, in fact. So what part of my business is helping people get booked onto other people's podcasts. That's what I do. So in the process of doing that, I'm connected to, I think it must be about 4,500 podcasters. I don't know. I don't count them anymore. There's a lot of them. There's a decent email list and a decent network that I've got going there. But I'm forever being solicited. Hey, can I come on your show? Can I come on your show? And what I've done is I've tightened down the criteria of who can come on the show, because everybody's an expert in something, but not everybody's really good at storytelling. So the folks that I've got coming up are really good storytellers, really experienced people. Had some amazingly experienced business owners in the last couple of episodes. One fellow has like 30 years of business experience, and he kind of fell into coaching because of his business experience. Another lady, same thing, 30 years in real estate, massively successful, and helps other real estate agents to be really successful. But it's not really a podcast about real estate or sales or anything like that. They're podcasts about their life and what they had to do to break through. And, you know, the common thread amongst all of that is everybody went all in at some point and everybody had to do something to break through. And they're great stories. And I've got lots of really good guests coming up just like that. I've got a fella coming up later this week. His name's Eric. Can't remember his surname. Okay. I should know that, or do the research before he comes on, and I will. But the fella's like, he started more than 20 businesses in 20 years, and he's exited all 20 of those businesses.
My God.
And I've started a few businesses, but I didn't exit them. I just stopped them because they didn't work.
I didn't exit them with a huge cash check.
I just stopped what I was doing, and there was no more cash check. So that's an example of something that is really interesting. Like how on earth did you do that? You know, how do you leverage your time? How do you do that? And I think what it comes down to is that, you know, if you're earning $400,000 a year and you want to earn $4 million a year, you're going to have to be really creative. You're going to have to do something very, very different to get yourself to the next level and 10X what it is that you need to 10X. And I really love telling the stories of those people, and I've got lots of those people coming up, which is kind of cool.
Oh, mate, fantastic. I'm looking forward to hearing all the episodes.
But awesome.
I agree with you. I mean, that's why I love podcasting, because regardless of the episode or the subject, what I love is just connecting with the other person and learning what I can learn from their journey in life.
Yeah.
And as you say, I listen to loads of different podcasts as well. I listen to, you know, people that talk about acting and politics, and some female podcasts and talking about relationships, and, you know, business podcasts and all sorts. And I just get so much from all of them, even though they're all so different.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you make the time to listen each day? Do you listen on a workout or on a walk?
I do.
You have like some podcasting zen time that you...
I do. Like my morning time when I get up and I'm doing a lot of my social media, I've always got a podcast on.
That's in your ears time. Or just in a speaker?
Just like in my speakerphone, just on the side. And while I'm doing my stuff, it's there. And sometimes I'll continue it during the day in the car or in my phone when I'm doing something else.
Yeah,
but
nice.
I start in the morning and I've always got something that I like to listen to. And I feel, if I miss it for the day, I feel lost. So I got to catch up.
It's incredible how much information we have access to. Yeah. You know, I've been listening to three different podcasts this week, but I also picked up a new audiobook as well.
Oh, great.
And I think the amount of time that I've spent kind of listening and learning and assimilating and taking notes and doing these things and emulating these bits and pieces that I want to implement into my business like that, it's an extraordinary time that we live in. It really is. And I feel really blessed to be part of that community and be doing that. And what I would say is that if anybody's watching this or listening to this that's thinking about getting into podcasting, do it. Get into it because it's enormously rewarding.
I was just about to ask you, I said, as a podcaster that's done so many episodes and knows so many podcasters, what advice would you give to, you know, future podcasters about setting up their podcast and how to actually execute a strong podcast?
Well, people ask me all the time, you know, is it too late to get into it? And the answer is no. There's now more than 1 million podcasts that are out there that we know about. And it's really hard to get the numbers because it's not aggregated like it is in Google, because Spotify is different to iTunes, is different to iHeartRadio. They're all, your RSS feed plugs into all of these different things, but there's no one way to pull the analytics together and to really know. But what we do know from iTunes is there's more than 1 million shows. And in those shows, the average number of episodes is about 17.
Wow.
So it's not that many. And about half of those haven't had an episode uploaded in the last 3 months.
There you go. So consistency.
So what it means is there's actually only 500,000 live shows with only about 15 to 20 episodes.
Yeah.
So if you think that podcasting is, oh, I missed the boat, oh, I can't get into it, the answer to that question is no, you haven't. There's plenty of time to get into it. Definitely. Because the vast majority of people that get into it don't stick with it. So you with your 97 episodes there, Darren, you're like well ahead of the average. You're well ahead of the curve. And kudos to you, man, for sticking with it and going for it like that. Yeah. And what I would say is if someone was considering to start a podcast, you know, the number one tip that I would give to them there, and I've helped a bunch of people launch their own shows as well. That's part of the service that I offer as well, which is a lot of fun. The number one thing is to give yourself a chance.
Yeah.
Podcasting is a skill. And like any skill, that skill takes time to develop. It takes time to refine. It's not easy to do. Some people are really fast learners and some people are like me are slow learners. It took me, I think, about 30 episodes to really get my message dialed in properly.
Me too.
And the way that I did that was by going on other people's shows and articulating my message, because going all in on something is a bit of an abstract concept. It's not like going on a show and talking about photography or talking about marketing or something like that. And talking about mindset is such a big topic. How do you narrow that into something that everybody can understand and be universal? And part of what I've learned to do over the couple of years that I've been doing it now is to refine that message to a point. And I developed a methodology to actually do that, which works pretty well. And that's what I teach to people to shorten their learning curve when they come and launch their shows with me.
Oh, fantastic, Rob. Now, for people out there that want to actually get in touch with you and learn about, you know, your show, your series and your workshops and whatever else, what's the best way for them to do that?
The easiest way to do that is just to go to goallin.com.au. And check it out there. And everything's there. The masterclass is there. If you want to get booked on a show, you can. And if you want to kick off your own podcast and find out some more about that, you can book an appointment and come and say hi on a Zoom call just like this.
Awesome. Well, mate, thank you so much. It's been a fantastic conversation. It's our second time we've chatted. And I always have a great time and I learn so much from you every time. So hopefully we can do it again. But for all the audience out there, jump on Rob's podcast, jump on his website. He's got a load of information that can help you. You know, he's a guy that's full of energy, full of insight, full of experience. So he's definitely someone to talk to. But before we finish up, I always like to ask my guests, in the vein of what we're talking about today, mindset and going all in, what can you leave us with? What can we learn and implement straight away and take to our, you know, make our day better from right now?
Well, I'm going to leave you with that funny quote because I think it always gets a giggle out of people. And I want you to ask yourself, are you bringing the juice? Because when you're juiceful, you're useful. So are you bringing the juice?
I love it. Well, mate, thank you so much for coming on the show. Absolute pleasure. And I'm going to put all the links to everything in the notes as well for everybody. But Rob, have a great day, man. And we'll see you very, very soon.
Thanks, Darren. Cheers, mate.
Pleasure, mate.